The Concievich integral, sorry, I should have pulled out my tools. My toys, I don't know, which one is it? Anyway, so just to remind you, the Concievich integral is given by this messy formula. When I restricted this formula to braids, okay, everything worked. Okay, or when I, not quite restricted, but when I wrote an analogous formula for the case of braids, then we could interpret this as the formal holonomy of some flat connection, and therefore we got the fact that we could deform the braid. Okay, now what do we do if it's a knot? So it's an ugly play of sort of not particularly interesting algebra with not particularly interesting analysis. So I'll do it briefly. Okay. So
can we turn off the light since we're using the screen?
Or? But we're not using just the screen. We're alternating between screen and blackboard. So this is a reasonable compromise, I'm afraid. Okay. So anyway, but you know, if you cannot read the screen, there is a printed version. Anybody else needs one? Okay. So first thing is to say that we can cut the knot into pieces and compute the integral separately for each piece, and then everything will work, and then sort of play with each piece separately. So let me first do it unsophisticatedly, and then say how you could do it more sophisticatedly, but without going through it, because it's not sufficiently interesting. So basically, if I have a knot, okay, I claim that I can compute its Concievich integral in parts. What do I mean? Pick, say, two horizontal lines, okay, and I can kind of define a partial Concievich integral. So I can define do a Concievich integral at the top, and then I can do a Concievich integral in the middle, and then I can do a Concievich integral in the bottom. The bottom part is not terribly interesting, but in principle, okay? And then I could assemble these. What do I mean? I mean, use the exact same formula at the top. Just the exact same formula, except restrict your integration domain. Instead of being from the minimum to the absolute maximum, it will be from this time point to the absolute maximum. Okay? And the other thing is that, everything makes sense, except instead of getting values in A reduced, you will be, which is right chord diagrams on a circle, you will be getting values, so this dp will have to be interpreted. So if you put chords on here, you will have to that's a bad sign. It means that my computer lost power, I think. Well, okay, I hope not, but anyway, you will have to interpret it as chord diagrams on only the part of the skeleton that you can see. So this will take values in a space of chord diagrams, reduced, meaning I mod out by the framing independence relation, but instead of the skeleton being a circle, the skeleton will be two arcs going like that. And in fact, I think they're oriented, so I mean oriented, okay? And What I mean by this space is that you can put chords here as you please, and the usual thing you mod out by the 40 relation. Okay? Likewise, the Concierge integral for the middle will take values in A reduced of the piece of the skeleton that you see in the middle, which I believe is something like that. Okay? Now, these intersections are not real. They're just artifacts of the projection. So these are just independent lines, okay? And again, you can put chords here as you please. And again, you mod by 40 and the framing independence relation. And, likewise for the last bit. Okay? And then, the claim is that there is an operation which takes the tensor product of these three spaces into A reduced of a circle. And what's the operation? Well, it's completely obvious, right? You just reassemble the diagram. Okay? And then my claim, and then the statement, the assertion that I'm making here, is that the Concierge integral of the entire knot is equal to compute the Concierge integral of the top, the Concierge integral of the middle, the Concierge integral of the bottom, and multiply them to get an answer here. Okay? Okay, having made this complicated statement, the proof is completely trivial. The proof is basically visually, it's visual inspection, sort of. So, what's the Concierge integral? The Concierge integral is to sprinkle chords arbitrarily. Okay, so you take your spray paint bottle that sprays out chords, right, and you spray the entire knot with chords by you just spray them arbitrarily, and then you take them with different weights, okay? But the weights are multiplicative, okay? The weights are, well, you know, if you take basically the weights with which each chord comes is or with which a configuration of chords comes is a product of weights, one weight per chord. Okay? This is the meaning of this wedge product. It's really, that's the multiplicativity. So if you sprinkle and then split, or more precisely, if you sprinkle at the top, or sprinkle and then in the middle, and then at the bottom, and then assemble, it's just the same as sprinkling everywhere. So this is the loose statement, and if you insist on a less loose statement, you do it yourself. I'm sorry, it's just not. I think please tell me that it's good enough. Please. Okay, good. Now let's fancify this a bit. Okay? So the fancification is that the Concierge integral is really a functor from a certain category of tangles to a certain category of spaces of chord diagrams. So the objects will be lists of points in the plane. So right, these are lists of points in the plane, and to be precise, it's more than lists of points in the plane. So for each point, you also have a direction, whether the arrows or whether the orientation is up or down. Okay, so basically a list of signed points in the plane. Okay, so these are the objects of the category. The morphisms between two such objects are the tangles in between them, the tangles you can write in between them, such that the orientations are consistent. The composition of morphisms is the stacking of tangles. Likewise here, except this is even less complicated because the precise geometry doesn't matter, only the identity of the point. So I mean, well, you know what? If you wish, just keep the geometry. I don't care. It doesn't really matter. But anyway, here the objects are the same, but the morphisms are core diagrams on skeleta that that have these points as ends, as ends. Okay? And ZK is, well, the Koncievich functor maps objects to to themselves and tangles to core diagrams, so morphisms in the first category to morphisms in the second category, and the claim is that, the only thing that I said here is that it's really a functor, so the composition of morphisms go to a composition of morphisms. So this fancification is unnecessary in this case. Later, I will do it more formally, or I will say it again, and I really care more. Okay? Okay. Anyway, with this said, with this and a tiny bit more said, so let me first say the tiny bit more. So, I already know that the Koncievich integral is well behaved on braids. So on braids, I know that I can deform as I please, keeping the endpoints. Okay? The thing I see here in the middle, even if I choose the slicing to have no critical points, are not quite braids because some of the strands are oriented up and some of the strands are oriented down. Okay? Without details, That's what the sign here is doing, and that's all. So basically, the only thing you have to check is that, so you see, the way I wrote the 4T relation, so the 4T relation for knots was written somehow with signs, okay? If you reverse one of the strands, it will amount to changing the order in which two of the terms appear, which will amount to a sign, and again, that's what the sign there is doing. So, so again, without detail, we get perfect we get perfectly good invariance on slices in which there are no critical points. Okay, so. So now suppose I want to move around critical points, okay? So suppose I have a complicated knot and I have these two critical, this connects in some complicated way, and I want to deform it so as to move this a bit up and to move this a bit down, okay? How do I do that? So that was the ugly algebra, now comes the ugly analysis. So you see, I can deform things horizontally as I please, that's really moving around braids, at levels in which there are no critical points. So I can shrink this to look like a needle. Okay? Sorry, I can do it even further up to the level of the critical point. I can shrink it to look like this, and in fact, above the critical point, I can shrink it again if I wish, okay? So, the only problem is that I can't move things at levels where there are critical points, at least not yet. Okay. Likewise here, I can shrink, I change the form of this one to look like I don't want to move the boundary points, but anyway, I shrink it to look like this. I cannot do anything at the level of critical points, and then it's a needle. Okay? So, okay, that much I can do, but what you know, I want to do more. So then comes a little bit of analysis. I mean, not really analysis, a tiny bit of estimate, okay? So the point is that, okay, well, if I have a chord here at the top, then the whole thing vanishes by, what do you call it? Framing independence, okay? So the top chord that might give a contribution, which has an end on this needle, must be a chord that comes from far away. Okay? Now, shrink this needle to distance epsilon, and then any chords that end on this needle and that comes from far away, I don't care if this far away is here or maybe it goes to a, you know, further feature of the knot over here, I don't care. But for any chord like this, there will be a counterpart that goes to the other side of the needle. Okay? Now, these two chords contribute the same diagram, because combinatorially, since there is nothing above on the needle, I can slide it down to here. So they contribute to the same diagram, but they contribute with opposite signs, because one is going up and one is going down. And they contribute with... and the difference of their contributions is like the difference in the values of the function 1 minus z, let's call this z prime, and let's call this z. So the amount that they contribute is the difference of the values of this function, roughly speaking, when you move z epsilon by an amount epsilon. So the difference of their contribution is proportional to epsilon. The difference between the two contributions is proportional to epsilon. But I could make epsilon be arbitrarily small. So in fact, I can ignore chords that end on the needle. Okay? Now, I have to be a little bit more careful. And the little bit more careful is because there may be further chords down here that are very, very short. And therefore, their contributions are proportional to 1 over epsilon. Right? But fortunately, I take chords with weights dzi minus dzi prime. So if I make the two sides parallel, dzi minus dzi prime is equal to 0. So I can ignore these as well. Okay? So basically, the bottom line, and by the way, if you want a book, so this is done in my paper, so this is done somewhat carefully in my paper on the Vasiliev knot invariance, and I don't exactly remember when it was published, but you know, you can find it on my website, and but it's done in painstaking detail. Sorry, is this correct English? In a book by Chmutov, Dujin, Lando, no, not Lando, Mostovoy. Sorry, there are so many papers by Chmutov, Dujin, Lando that it's hard, that it almost became a pattern in my mind. Anyway, it's done in great detail with sort of a lot, perfect attention to the epsilons, okay? But anyway, so in their book, okay, there is a book called On the Vasilia, well, I don't remember what the title of the book is, but there is a book by these people, okay?
Is it Jacob Mostovoy? Who's Mostovoy?
I'm not sure, but he's in Mexico.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, So the moral is, if there is a chord ending here, I can ignore it. But if I can ignore it, it means I can ignore the whole needle. No needle. Okay? No this needle either, for the same reason. But now there was no obstruction to thinning this. Okay? So I could thin this as much as I want. Again, this is just a horizontal deformation at the level in which critical points no longer exist. Okay? And likewise, I can thin this as much as I want. And now I can get rid of the remaining needleish information, needleish stuff, and I've moved my two critical points past each other. Okay? So that's the ugly analysis. Okay? Well, again, well, how ugly it is your... But that's what you do. You basically say you thin the needles to nothing, and then you get rid of, and then you get rid of them. There is one thing that this argument still doesn't do, unfortunately. So with this argument, you can move things. Basically, you can move critical points around as much as you want. But the critical points will always stay. Nothing here, nothing in this argument, so you can, if you shrink a needle, well, it moved, the critical point moved, but it's still there. Nothing in this argument will ever cancel a pair of critical points. Okay? So, in fact, so you can ask yourself, what if there is a pair of critical points somewhere on the knot? And of course, topologically, this is the same as that. So so how do you cancel a pair of critical points? No needling around will do anything. Okay, so by needling around, I can turn it into this, and then I can move this, and then I can make it. So I can make it more and more shallow, but I cannot get rid of it. And in fact, this is a fundamental issue, or not a fundamental issue. It's actually a problem with the Concievich integral. So in fact, when Concievich first stated the Concievich integral, he did not notice this, and then the second variation only had the correction. Okay, so. In fact, if you look at this picture, the contribution coming from this pair of chords, you can compute it explicitly. It's 1 over 24 or something like that, times this combination of chords, and it's not zero. Okay? Whereas here, you will never have a local contribution kind of, well, to counter it. Okay? So, basically, here you get no local contributions. The only contributions are for chords going too far away. But here there is a local contribution, and there cannot be anything to cancel it. And so what do you do? So what you do is you compute this contribution once and for all, give it a name, and divide by it, raised to an appropriate power. Okay? So the first thing I have to do is to tell you how to divide. Okay? I have to lift my target space to be an algebra, so that I can multiply, and if things are invertible, divide. Okay? So this is something that I should have said a long time ago. Do you remember? This must sound wonderful on the video. Sorry, do you remember if I took the upper one I took? This one, it's not clear to me that it's worth taking, but I'll take it nevertheless because it has the references. And I suppose this is to remind us what the trouble is. And now I want to make our target space an algebra so that I can multiply by counter term to solve this issue. Okay? So this is a little bit of an aside. But first let me tell this aside in not-theoretic language. So in not-theoretic language, let me say that knottings of a circle are equal to long knots, to knottings of a line. Okay? So basically, if you have a circle knotted, that's the same thing as having a long line going from minus infinity to infinity knotted, with the provision that you cannot move it at infinity. So basically you move only things in some compact part on of R3. Okay? That's statement number one about ordinary knot theory. And statement number two is that K of, well, either one, they're the same. So maybe I'll state it for a line because it's obvious. It's more obvious. Is a G, what do you call a thing that has a multiplication, a unit, but not inverses? Monoid? Okay. So is a commutative monoid. So it's almost like a group, except things don't have inverses. Okay? So why is it true? Well, okay. The map from here to here is obvious. If you have a knotting of a long line, you just take the two ends and you close them far near infinity and you got a knotting of a circle. The map going the other way requires effort, okay? Because the claim, so I have a round knot, and the claim is that it doesn't, okay, so the opposite would be to cut somewhere and open and throw it and make it a long knot. Okay? But the thing you have to show is that it doesn't matter where you cut. Okay? So, you need to show that how do you do that? Okay, so let me say it in a you know what? Yeah, okay, I could say it in several ways, but here's a different way of saying it. How do you make a knot into a long knot? You choose a line which will be the long line. Okay, this is the line which will, this line describes the expected behavior at infinity. You choose a path from this line to the knot, and you replace the path by a little bridge. Okay? And I things are oriented so it's clear how to so the claim I want to make is that it doesn't matter which path you take. Okay? So the claim I want to make is that if you choose this path to do this procedure or any other path, where's the blue? There was a single colored chalk. Here it is. or I don't know, this path, oh, you cannot see the colors anyway. The claim is that it doesn't matter which path you choose. Okay, either one will work just as well. Why is it true? I'm confused. I mean, this is true, but it's not the easy way to do it. Sorry. Here's the easy way to do it. I'm sorry. Okay. Well, okay. Here's your proof that one cannot keep in his mind at one time 2 weeks worth of material. So this is the first proof. There will be more proofs later. Okay. So, the process of opening up is the process of marking a point and declaring that it's infinity. Okay? So, take this point and, say the knot is drawn on a sphere, move this slide it to the North Pole and open it up. So, I want to show that I can move the point of infinity to the point called infinity to some other place. Okay? But moving the point called infinity across a line is the same as moving the line across the point of infinity. So I want to show that that the knot written now is equivalent to the knot now written, but I want to do it without having to move this line over infinity because I'm only allowed to move things in away from infinity. So I'm only right. The equivalence relation on long knots is to keep infinity fixed. So I want to be able to show that if I have a knot with a point on it, I can slide any arc past the, or rather, the knot that you get by easily sliding an arc past it is equivalent without having to slide past that point. Okay, sorry, I think I'm saying it in a complicated way. Anyway, the trick is to slide stuff rather than across this point, you slide it over the entire sphere on the other side. Gee, I'm sorry, I think I what? No. My goal is to prove that the knottings of a circle are equal to the knottings of a line.
So you don't want to slide it for infinity. So it's more or less just sliding one strand across a knot.
So what I want to do is, you know, I have a sphere here, and if I wanted to slide an arc across infinity, well, I cannot do it, but I could do it the long way around.
Yes.
I could get the same effect by sliding it the long way around.
Then you would have to go through the knot.
Well, I'll go under the knot throughout,
exactly, yeah.
Which is fair, which is legitimate. This, by the way, fails for virtual knots and for W knots, but this will come later. Okay? Okay. Anyway, so you know what? I'm sorry, but... Okay. As for the commutative monoid, that's even easier, or not easier, well, that also works. So, you know, if I have a knot here and another knot here, A and B, well, the monoid is obvious, okay? I mean, the multiplication is concatenation. But I need to show that it's commutative. So the proof that it's commutative is you take the knot A you shrink it until it's tiny, 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 tiny. You slide it through B until it comes on the other side, and then you expand it again, and you've shown commutativity. Okay? Sorry. But anyway, my claim is that the same is true at the level of core diagrams. So, where should I write this? You know what? This was so embarrassing that the best thing to do if it is to eliminate it. No evidence.
Yes, suffers.
What?
Yes, suffers.
Yeah. Okay. So claim A of a circle is equal isomorphic to A of a line. And again, what I mean by that is this is the skeleton, put a core diagram on top whichever way you want, here or here, and mod out by 4T relations or STU relations or whatever, or you know, any of those equivalent formulations, and the claim is that the two are isomorphic. Furthermore, so A of a line is obviously an algebra, because you can multiply by concatenation, and therefore this one is also an algebra, but you know. But the claim is that it is commutative. Okay? Anyway, the map going this way is obvious. If you have a core diagram on a line, you just close the line, you got a core diagram on a circle. So the issue is, given a core diagram on a circle, how do you open it up to become a core diagram on a line? So you have a core diagram on a circle. You want to compare cutting it open here or cutting it open here. Okay? But a different way to say it is to say you have a core diagram here. I want to show that if I take the leftmost chord, the leftmost chord end, and move it to the very right, to the rightmost point, it's the same. I got something equivalent. So I want to show that moving something from the very left to the very right is doing nothing modulo 4t. Okay? So the question, okay. So this is the question. Now let's prove it. So I'll prove something slightly different, but which will be the same. Okay? So suppose I have some chord diagram like this, and suppose I have some other chord coming from outer space, I don't know, from some other place in the universe, okay? I want to show that connecting it here is the same as connecting it here. So that's not quite the same, because here the chord came from within. The chord came from within. So I'll deal with that case later. Okay? But I just want to show that if you have a chord, well, as a first step, I want to show what I just said. Proof. Okay? So, write many, many little hooks, two around each chord end. Draw many, many little hooks. Okay? And put signs next to them, but make them alternating. So plus, minus, plus, minus, plus. Well, I get confused here. But it gets too dense. But basically continue in an alternating manner. Okay? And then let S be the sum of all ways of connecting, what should I call this chord end coming from outer space? I don't know, C to the hooks. Okay? Then, let me compute this sum in two different ways. So, one way is to say, let us, well, on along, by summing along bottom edges, I get that, well, you see, on each bottom edge, there are two hooks. One comes with a plus sign and one comes with a minus sign, and it doesn't matter if I connect the cord here or here. Combinatorially, that's the same. So this cancels this, this cancels this, this cancels this, and so on. So by summing along bottom edges, I get zero from all the internal ones, but on the outside, I have one plus with nothing to cancel it, and one minus with nothing to cancel it, so I get whatever mess I had before with this connected in to the left, minus whatever less mess I had before with C connected to the right. Okay? Now, but I also can sum around the chords. So by summing around chords. Okay? So in other words, around each chord there are four hooks, right? Two near the end, two near one side and two near the other side. Okay? By summing and this covers all the hooks. But you see, summing around the chords, I just get zero. Because by 4T. Okay? That's the 4T relation. So therefore, summing, okay, so therefore I've proven what I wanted. Connecting to the left is the same as connecting to the right. Now, what if this chord had actually begun within the diagram? Then, well, I would also have a plus minus pair here, but they would cancel each other, because connecting the chord to the plus or to the minus, in either case, you'll get just a tiny bridge here, which is, well, and these two bridges cancel each other. Okay? So, so I've proven part one. I've proven claim number one. Okay? But I've actually proven, so, every time you prove something, it's a reason for celebration, right? Okay? So, so what about claim number two? So proof of two? Well, we've essentially done that. So suppose I have a bunch of chords A and a bunch of chords B, and I want to flip the order. So take the right, so I mean here there might be plenty, okay? Anyway, take the rightmost, move it over to the other side. Then take the next one, move it over to the other side using the same lemma. Then take the next one, move it over to the other, well, you're done. Okay? Until you've moved the whole thing. So the theorem is proven. Okay? And before using it, so I'm about to use it in our context, but before using it, I want to slightly generalize it. So the generalization is as follows. Suppose you have a chord diagram D, okay, and it's on a skeleton much like the skeleta that I had during the computation of the Concievich integral. So a skeleton that's not necessarily a circle. Okay, so I might have in here an arbitrary skeleton, but there are a few lines going up to the top and a few lines going down to the bottom. Okay, so my claim is that with appropriate signs, the sum of all ways of connecting a cord from the outside to these ends, to the outside legs, is equal to zero. So this sum is equal to zero. Okay? And what the signs are depend on the orientation of the strands. So if all of them are pointing up, then it's just a plain sum. And if some of them are pointing down, then you have to put a minus one in front of each one that's pointing down. Okay? Proof, the exact same proof. So look at this diagram, look at the thing that you have here inside. There are many cords in it. Put pluses and minuses, put all those hooks. Connect the cord coming from the outside to everything. One summation will give zero, the other summation will give the things that are not paired, so the things on the outside, and this is it. Okay. Anyway, so so now let's fix the Kontsievich integral. So so take this zigzag, okay, and compute its Kontsievich integral. It's not trivial, unfortunately. But whatever it is, the Kontsievich integral of this thing belongs to A of a zigzag, but the zigzag has no meaning combinatorially, so it's just A of a line. Okay? Call this thing, I think over here, I call it Z of infinity. Okay? But a better name is, a more current name is Mu. Because it appears in many places and this has somehow got to be the standardized name. I hope it's Nu and not in Nu inverse. I'm not sure if it's Nu or Nu inverse. Okay, let's decide that it's Nu inverse. Okay? Then, and you know, you could compute it explicitly. In fact, this is sufficiently simple that a complete closed form is known. Okay? So, and the closed form is something like 1 plus maybe 1 over 24 times this chord diagram plus and so on. Okay? And by the way, the fact that it's 1 plus higher degree things means that it's invertible. Because we're in a graded algebra, basically 1 plus x inverse is equal to 1 minus x plus x squared minus x cubed and so on. And if x is of positive degree, this series is convergent. So nu inverse is invertible. So, okay? The thing I just called nu inverse is invertible. Anyway, this done,
all the coefficients of higher degrees are known to be rational numbers.
Yes, and in fact are explicitly computed. And this is almost the only place where the Kontsievich integral is computed. Okay? Anyway, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it's a... I mean, even if it wasn't, it would still be just fixed, some fixed thing. And it's a fixed thing, by the way, because all such zigzags are equivalent, because you can deform one to the other by doing horizontal moves and by moving the critical points without crossing them against each other. So it's a fixed canonical element, okay? So basically, redefine the Kontsievich integral. So define z tilde of not k, by to be the old z of the not k da. So just redefine it to be the old thing, except near each maxima or minima, so near each critical point, put a factor of nu to the 1/2. Okay? So just inject more cold, more inject a factor of nu to the 1, sorry, nu to the 1/2 also makes sense because you can also take square roots by power series. So just inject the nu to the 1/2 near each critical point.
Why half?
What?
Why nu 1/2?
Why nu to the 1/2? Because now z tilde of a zigzag will be z of a zigzag with a nu to the 1/2 here, another nu to the 1/2, another nu to the 1/2 here. You can slide these two nu to the 1/2 to be next to each other. I mean, there will be more chords here, but still you can slide through them. That's exactly the lemma that I've proven. They combine to a single nu, take this nu, slide it out, and you have nu times nu inverse, and you get that this is the same as z of a single line, which is just nothing. Okay? And you've solved the problem.
Time for the break.
One word before. Doing this changed the value of the unknot. So z of the unknot, which original, so what is the Concievich integral of the z of the unknot is just 1. Basically, every chord diagram that you will write here will have an isolated chord in it, and therefore you'll get 1. Okay? However, the correct Concievich integral, so this z is just it's not an invariant even, but the invariant of the unknot will be this 1 with 2 extra factors of nu to the 1/2, so it will be nu. Okay? And that's the only. Okay, so time for a break, so let's take a break. Sorry if this was